This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio.
Box 13, with the star of Paramount Pictures, Alan Ladd, as Dan Holliday.
Hey, look, boss, look at this. An ad in the Star Times out-of-town newspaper. Yeah.
Box 13, adventure wanted. We'll go any place, do anything. Well, this looks like the right answer, Tony.
Yeah.
I think I'll write a letter to Box 13.
The letter was postmarked from a city in Nevada. It came airmail, special delivery to Box 13 and me. It sounded like a great chance to grab a change of scenery and maybe a little fun. Fun? Brother, how wrong could I be?
Now, back to Box 13 and Dan Holliday's newest adventure, Triple Cross.
Just run an advertisement in the Star Times, one that reads, "Adventure wanted, will go any place, do anything," and see what you get. A lot of them can be interesting, like the one I listened to Susie read, the one that came airmail, special delivery from Nevada.
Enclosed is enough money to buy you a plane ticket to Los Meros. You want adventure? All right. Come to Los Meros. Register at the Paradise Hotel. Wait in your room until you're contacted.
And that's all it says, Susie?
That's all, Mr. Holliday. There's not even a signature, even. It's what's called an ominous letter.
What kind of a letter, Susie?
Ominous. That means it's not signed by anybody.
The word you mean is anonymous.
Oh.
But you could be right after all. Well, Susie, lock up the office and look for me when you see me with a new plot and a nice tan. A new plot and a nice tan, I said. I got the plot, but the tan almost turned into a beautiful white pallor, the kind that goes well with lilies. The plane trip was smooth. The trip from airport to the Paradise Hotel was nice and easy. And the hotel itself? Well, it was the only one I could remember that looked like the ads in the travel folders. Oddly enough, there was a room reserved for me in my name. Okay, somebody checked and found out who I was. I explored the suite, thinking maybe I'd get a lead on what this was all about. But it was just a fancy set of rooms, all newly decorated. I sat down, and then, about a half hour later... Come in.
Message for you, Mr. Holliday.
Oh, thanks. Here you are.
Well, thank you.
Just a minute. Who gave this to you?
A man, sir.
What kind of a man? What'd he look like?
Oh, just a man, sir.
Oh, I see. A head, two eyes, nose, two ears, and a mouth. That his description?
Yes, sir. That's exactly what he looked like.
Good. But I'll know him when I see him. Oh, did he ask for an answer?
No, sir. He just told me to bring the envelope to you. Will that be all, sir?
Huh? Oh, yes, thanks. Well, two $100 bills and a message that said, "Buy a red carnation in the flower shop and put it in your lapel. After dinner, go to the casino roulette table, buy $200 in chips and put them on number 18. If you win, walk away, wait 10 minutes, and put half the winnings on number 22. After you play, wait in the casino." So, with a carnation in my lapel, I bought $200 in chips and walked to the roulette table. There weren't many players. It was a little too early for the big crowd. So I waited a minute and watched the play. Took a look at the croupier, but I might as well have been in Timbuktu. He didn't give me a tumble. Okay, the best way to see what was going to happen was to see. I shoved a whole 200 on number 18. One or two of the other players placed bets, and then...
No more bets, please. No more bets. Number 18, red and even. Your chips, sir.
The croupier shoved the winnings across to me. I watched his face. If he had any expression, it was on the soles of his shoes. Well, maybe $7,000 win was common around here. I left the table, sat down, and did a little problem in arithmetic, which figured out to be $126,000. That's what I'd have if number 22 came up. And brother, it looked from where I sat as though it would. The 10 minutes went by, and I walked back to the table. Waited until the wheel stopped.
Number 16, red and even. Place your bets, please, ladies and gentlemen.
Slowly, I shoved 3,500 in chips to number 22. This time, the others around the wheel did look. 3,500 to 35 to 1. Then the wheel began to slow up.
No more bets, ladies and gentlemen. No more bets, please.
That croupier was as cold as the floor of a mausoleum. Somebody dropped a pin, and I heard it hit the floor. The white ball clicked, clicked, clicked its way until...
Number 22, black and even. Your chip, sir.
I cashed in the chips, and there I sat, with $126,000 tucked away in my inside coat pocket. Somebody had that wheel fixed for a killing. I began to wish I was back in my office. I didn't like it. A crooked play. Why? Who? I made up my mind to go to the owner of the place and wash my hands of the whole thing when...
Oh, there you are, Mr. Holliday. I've been looking for you. I have a message for you.
Yeah?
Well, it's verbal this time, Mr. Holliday.
Oh, what is it?
You're to go into the bar and wait.
Is that all?
Yes, sir.
The same man gave you this message?
Yes, sir.
Did he still have a head, two eyes, a nose, and two ears?
Yes, sir.
All right, here you are, kid.
Oh, thank you.
You know, if this keeps up much longer, you'll be able to retire my tips alone.
Thank you, Mr. Holliday. Will that be all?
How much did this character give you to forget what he looked like?
Well, nothing, sir. Nothing at all.
And a smart boy like you should have taken a good look the second time.
Huh?
Especially since I asked about him after the first message.
Oh, he was big, dark, a little mustache, and... He had a little white scar over his right eye.
Will you take $5 for that information?
That's all right, Mr. Holliday. No charge for that service.
Good boy. I'll see you later.
Yes, sir, Mr. Holliday.
I walked toward the bar, wondering what was coming next. I didn't like that fortune burning the cloth in my pocket. The bar was like my suite. Fancy, rich, and expensive. I climbed up on one of the stools, and the bartender came over and...
Yes, sir. May I serve you, sir?
Got any ginger ale?
Yes, sir. What with, sir?
Oh, by itself. Just a glass of ginger ale.
Just a ginger ale?
Uh-huh. You see, I like the bubbles.
Champagne has bubbles, too.
But they're still around the next day. Just a ginger ale.
Yes, sir. Of course.
Excuse me. Is someone sitting here?
Oh, no. I don't think so.
Thank you.
Here you are, sir. Ginger ale.
Thanks.
The usual, please.
Okay. Yes, sir. May I?
You got a light?
Of course.
Thank you.
Don't mention it.
Here you are.
Thanks. Why do you drink ginger ale?
I like it. Why do you drink martinis?
Same reason, I guess. It's a brilliant conversation, isn't it?
Well, I've heard better.
You're not very friendly, are you?
Boy Scout is always friendly.
And does good turns. So I hear.
Do you want to be helped across the street?
All right, I'll shut up.
I took a good look at her. There was something scared looking about her. And she was nervous. Well, so was I, because the minutes were passing and I still had that money. And I wanted to get rid of it. But I wondered about the girl, whether she had any part in this. I watched her out of the corner of my eye. She picked up her bag, reached for a lipstick, and then...
Oh, clumsy.
So it's true what they say about women's handbags. You get the stuff on the bar, I'll pick up the kitchen sink off the floor.
I'm so sorry. Did the powder spill on you?
No, it's all right. Yeah. Here you are.
The mirror didn't break, did it?
Nope, you're still good for 7 years more.
Thanks. Thanks ever so much.
I told you I was a good boy, Scott.
You have a nice smile.
Want a toothpaste commercial to go with it?
Now, don't be nasty.
I'm sorry. I guess I'm just as nervous as you are.
I... Let's talk about something else.
She chattered away, and
it really is
I listened with half
place,
an ear. Once in a while, threw in a yes so or a no, and the clouds began to gather. The mirror at the back of the bar went back and forth. The people got bigger, then shrank the midgets. Somebody drove a plane through my head. It buzzed around and made a bad landing on my brain. That...
There you are. Feeling better now?
Oh.
You'll be all right. Just lie there, take it easy.
Sure, I... Hey. Hey, I'm in my room.
Of course. We brought you here.
We?
I'm the hotel physician, Mr. Holliday.
Oh, what happened?
And just a fainting spell, nothing serious.
Fainting spell? What are you talking about?
Yeah, fainting spells. Your wife told me you get them.
My what told you what?
No, just lie back.
Whose wife said what?
Your wife. She's got to have a prescription filled.
Now, listen, Doc, I... Hand me my coat, will you?
It's better if you lie here.
It's better if you hand me my coat. Give it to me.
Oh, very well. There you are. What's the matter?
Was my wife in this room?
Of course, she came up with me.
Uh-huh. Doc, what would you do with $126,000?
What? That's an odd question. What would you do with it?
I don't know. Because I haven't got it anymore.
Now, back to Triple Cross, another Box 13 adventure with Alan Ladd as Dan Holliday.
So there I was, $126,000 in the red. If it was meant to be taken from me, then somebody was working it the hard way. Sure, the girl slipped something in my ginger ale when I picked up the stuff that fell out of her handbag. She took the money. All right, I wanted no more of it. I was going to head for the nearest exit, running, not walking, when... Come in.
You Holliday?
Yeah. Do I know you?
Call me Tony. I'm the guy who wrote the Box 13.
Oh. All right, goodbye, Tony.
Sit down.
What's the idea?
Funny, I was going to ask you that.
We're playing 20 questions. Let's skip the other 18, Tony.
I got a big one left. Where's the dough?
You tell me.
Give it to me.
Well, I didn't like him. I didn't like the gun he was playing with either. And I didn't like the little white scar over his right eye or the little black mustache. I was willing right then and there to cross him off my friendship list. But I told him what happened.
It's a great story. Ain't heard one like it since I read fairy tales.
Well, I don't care if you believe it or not.
You got no regard for your health, Holliday.
Look, Tony, I'm leaving this place
You'll
now.
You'll be too heavy to carry out if you take one more step. That's better. Now, what kind of a frame is this?
Once more, you tell me. I played a crooked wheel downstairs. I don't like that.
You got adventure, didn't you?
I don't want anything that's crooked.
Now, look who's talking. Who was the girl?
Believe it or not, I never saw her before.
What did she look like?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Ever try to take a good look at anyone in that bar downstairs? It's too dark to even see a lighted match.
You're smart, Holliday. The game with the girl is neat, awful neat. You get the dough, play doggo. Act like the girl slipped you, Mickey. Later she turns up with the dough and you two split.
Now talk sense, Tony. I didn't know why I came to Los Morris in the first place. I didn't know how I was going to get that money. How would I have time to dream up that frame with a girl?
Yeah. Yeah, I never thought of that. Okay, Holliday, maybe you're telling it straight.
Okay. Now can I go?
No. You get that money back first, then you can go.
I don't think I'll stay for the ninth inning, Tony.
The game has not started yet, but you get that dough.
How?
That's your problem, but get it.
Look, Tony, I'm backing out of this. You know I can go to the sheriff.
No, you won't. Because there'll be a tail on you from now on up. One move like you're going to the law. Understand?
Okay, I get it.
And there'll be somebody in this room to see that you don't use the phone. You'll be covered like a pool table, Holliday.
What if I can't find the girl? What if I can't get the money back?
The boss will be awful mad.
And?
There are worse places than Los Morros to spend a lifetime. If you live.
Ever have one of those dreams in which you try to run away from something and can't? Well, this one, with my eyes wide open, was really something. Tony and I went downstairs. Two other characters detached themselves from chairs when Tony nodded at them. Brother, I was covered. It looked hopeless. With Tony not far behind, I asked the doctor if he'd ever seen the girl who said she was my wife. Well, there was no dice there. Then I remembered something. I told Tony I was going back into the bar.
Bar? What for?
Now, look, Tony. Let me do it my way. I'm the one that's on the spot, so let me play it the way I want.
Okay. I'll watch, and don't try for a quick steal, because the boys outside know what to look for. Go ahead.
Thanks. What would I do without you, Tony?
I don't know, because you're not going to be without me. Remember, I'll be watching.
Yes, sir. May I serve you?
Well, feeling better, sir?
Well, much. Where were you when I fainted?
At the other end of the bar, sir.
Oh, yeah. So you were.
It wasn't our ginger ale, sir.
No, it wasn't. I just have a loose head, and when I shake it, it comes off.
May I serve you something, sir?
Yes. An answer to a question.
Well, what's that, sir?
Who was the girl who sat down next to me?
I don't know, sir.
Oh, yes, you do.
I beg your pardon, sir.
Quit the sir business. You knew that girl.
Why do you say that?
Because when she sat down, she asked for the usual, and you brought her a martini. And you said okay when she asked you.
What does that prove?
The martini proves you knew who she was. The okay means she wasn't a guest of the hotel. No bartender, as polite as you are, would say okay to a lady guest. That makes sense?
Why do you want to know who she is?
Does that make any difference?
Yeah, because I wouldn't want to see her in trouble.
I'll try to keep her out of it.
I won't tell you.
Ever see a picture of Alexander Hamilton?
Hmm? What are you talking about?
Well, here's one. And funny enough, it's on a $10 bill. In fact, his picture's on all five of these bills.
Yeah. Her name's Kathy Lee. I think she has a place at the Las Palmas Courts.
Thanks. Put these pictures in frames, will you? I found the Las Palmas Courts. And, of course, Tony behind me all the way. The name list in front said Kathy Lee lived in number 8. I looked around before I turned in the walk. Yeah, Tony was closer to me than varnish on a tabletop. I found number 8 and stopped for a second. Looked for a phone line, but there wasn't any. I knocked at the door. No answer. I tried it again. Then I heard Tony whisper from the shadows.
Try the door, Halliday.
I did. It was unlocked. Tony coached from the sidelines.
Go on in.
I went in and closed the door behind me. It was dark. I decided to risk a call. Kathy? Kathy? Kathy Lee? She wasn't there. I fumbled my way to what felt like a dresser. The lamp. Turned it on, and what I saw made me turn that light off fast.
What's the matter?
She's dead.
What are you talking about?
You heard me. She's dead.
You sure?
Well, go in and look.
You go back in and look for that dope. Go on.
Now look, Tony, I don't know any more of this. That poor kid's dead. Murdered. I want you to call the sheriff.
No, you don't. I said you go back in there and look for that dope.
You look for it.
Leave my fingerprints all over the place. Now you go back in there and hunt.
Don't be a sap. Whoever killed her took the money. Don't you see that?
Maybe. But we'll play this angle all the way. Now stop talking and get in there.
I hated to turn on that light, but I had to. I didn't look at her. I looked through the room. Then I found something. Plane ticket to San Francisco, leaving that night, and a boat ticket for South America. They were in an envelope, but the information on the envelope said there would be 2 reservations. I put it back where I found it because I didn't want Tony to find it on me. And there was something else, a locket with a man's picture in it. I took it off his chain and shoved it in my pocket, then I left.
Well, Helene?
It's not there. I told you it wouldn't be.
Stand still. Back toward me.
A frisk, Tony? You don't trust me, do you?
Shut up.
now. I told you.
Who killed her?
Find that out and you'll know where the money went.
Come on.
What's so funny?
Halliday, right now I wouldn't want to be in your shoes.
Tony was right. People at the casino saw me win that money, and somebody must have seen the girl with me. Then I got the Mickey, the money was taken, the girl killed. Who did it? Me, Dan Halliday. Because the girl clipped me for the money. Well, this was a beautiful frame. Any art gallery in the country would be proud to hang it. But I knew something Tony didn't. The plane and boat tickets. Two seats. One for Kathy and her murderer. Somebody who left her tickets in her bungalow to make it look as though she was in on the $100,000 job by herself. Sure. Now her killer was taking a plane. In 1 hour. Then a boat to South America. I could have told Tony, but I wanted to wrap it up myself. Besides, I wanted to get the whole thing to the law. On the way back to the hotel, I figured something out for myself. But I'd have to see the boss of the casino, and I thought I knew how to do that without Tony tagging along. The casino was full. I stopped. Tony stopped.
What's the idea? What now?
I've got to think.
Up to your room.
No.
You want to get hurt?
Sure, go ahead. Shoot me. Now. In front of all these people. You know, Tony, you wouldn't get 10 feet.
Smart, ain't you? Okay, what's now?
I'm going to play blackjack.
What?
Want to watch? I sat at the blackjack table. I had as much interest in the game as Aunt Mamie back in Iowa, who never saw a deck of cards in her life. But I had an idea, and I played it for all it was worth. Look, dealer.
Yes?
I didn't like that last deal.
I beg your pardon, sir.
I said I didn't like that last deal.
Well, return your money, sir.
Never mind the money. Who runs this place?
Hey, what is that guy trying to put on over there?
It worked. In 3 seconds, I was surrounded by muscle boys, and Tony was hotter than a New York sidewalk in August. But he couldn't touch me. A minute later, I sat across the table from the owner of the casino. I told him what happened, and when I finished, he stared at me and said,
"You're trying to tell me somebody let you win that money on my wheel?"
I am?
You're crazy. The wheel's straight.
But you know I won that money.
Sure I do. Anytime $100,000 slides across, I know it. But...
But this time it was fixed. The croupier was tipped I was to win.
Wait a minute. Marty, send Frankie up here right away. Huh? Oh. Okay, forget it.
What's the matter?
Frankie, the croupier. Went off duty just after you won. He's not back yet.
And he won't come back. Now, somebody planned to take the house this evening for that money. Somebody who couldn't risk getting it himself. So I'm the logical one. No one knows me here. I'd look like just another player. Later, Mr. Fixit plans to pick up the money and beat it. Who? Someone besides yourself who could get to the croupier and bribe him to fix the wheel. Got any ideas?
Yeah. One. My partner.
Well, that's it, then. It's got to be.
But the girl, she doped you. That was a hard way to get the money from you.
Listen, I've got an idea, but I'm a little cramped for room. Some of your partner's boys, particularly a guy named Tony, are glued to me. Get some of your boys to shake them off, and I'll bring that money back to you.
How do you know where it is?
I know.
Okay, Halliday. But remember, fast play, and I'll find you if it takes the rest of my life.
It's a deal. Now, how about the boys?
They won't follow you. Marty, a guy will leave my office. Some mugs are tailing him. Stop him. Got it? Good. All right, Halliday, you're on first base. Go ahead.
I was sure he'd be at the airport, and I wasn't wrong. He was sitting in the shadows on the outside. I walked over to him, and he looked up.
Halliday. I thought you would be...
Thought I'd be framed, huh, Frankie?
What are you doing here?
I've got a message from Kathy Lee.
Kathy? She's...
You ought to know. You killed her.
You're crazy.
Not only that, you've got $126,000 in that bag. $126,000 that looked like easy money.
Shut up.
That money doesn't mean a thing. It's the girl who counts, the girl who was willing to do what you told her to do. The girl you triple-crossed and killed after you double-crossed your boss who bribed you to fix the wheel.
It's too bad you're so smart, Holiday.
It's too bad you led with that right, Frankie. Somebody call the police to come and clean this up.
Was... Oh, please hurry, Mr. Holiday. I want to hear the ending.
All right, Susie, all right. What do you want to know?
Well, how did you guess that Kathy Lee was the croupier's girl?
Well, her locket had his picture in it.
Oh, they should have given you the money as a reward.
No, thanks, Susie, they can have it.
But there's one thing I don't understand, Mr. Holiday.
And that's?
You didn't get a tan at all. You're just as pale as when you left.
Oh, $126,000. A murder and a tan, too, she wants. Good night, Susie.
Next week, same time, Alan Ladd stars as Dan Holiday in Box 13. Alan Ladd appears through the courtesy of Paramount Pictures. Watch for him in his new picture, Saigon. Box 13 is directed by Richard Sandville, with original story by Russell Hughes, and original music composed and conducted by Rudy Schrager. The part of Susie is played by Sylvia Picker. Production supervision is by Vern Karstensen. This is a Mayfair production.
Time now for Rocky Jordan. Not far from the Mosque Sultan Hassan in Cairo stands the Cafe Tambourine, run by Rocky Jordan. The Cafe Tambourine, crowded with forgotten men, alive with the babble of many languages. For this is Cairo, where modern adventure and intrigue unfold against a backdrop of antiquity. Tonight's story, Red Stands for Blood.
It gets cold in Cairo at night. Friday night was particularly cold, and the tambourine was doing well. I had just put in a session at the till and had started over to my office when Chris called me to the phone. A man was at the other end of the line and his voice wavered like a palm tree in a windstorm.
Mr. Jordan.
Yeah?
My name is Jan Melnick. I wish to inquire about renting your cafe tambourine for an evening.
Oh, it can be done.
I'm expecting to have a big party and I thought, well, if we could get together on certain details.
Well, we could certainly try.
Could you come to see me? My address is 207 Sharia Nazim, apartment 3.
Sharia Nazim?
Yes, please come. I expect you later this evening.
Mr. Melnick. It sounded phony from the beginning. The Sharia Nazim winds through the poorest section of Cairo. Well, maybe Melnick won a lottery or something and was looking for a way to celebrate, so I decided to go out and see him. 207 Sharia Nazim turned out to be a wooden apartment building with a big lean-to. It was old and dirty, and it figured to be put together by a pile of scrap wood somebody fished out of the Nile. But I'd come a long way to see Melnick, so I wasn't going back. I went inside and started down a dark, creaking hallway looking for apartment 3. It finally showed at the end of the hall, and I rapped on the door. Nobody answered, and I tried again. Then a voice came floating back at me from inside the room.
Yes? Who is there?
Jordan. I'm looking for a Mr. Melnick.
All right. Come in, Mr. Jordan. I'm most pleased to meet you.
He had thrown open the door to let me in. I got my first look at him. He was short and fat, and he wore a hearing aid, the battery kind. He was dressed in a tight-fitting double-breasted suit, and a packed valise stood at his side. It figured he was ready for traveling. A nervous look covered his face, but somehow, when I came in, he relaxed.
Yes, Mr. Jordan, most pleasant to meet you.
Haven't I seen you around Cairo before?
Perhaps you have. I've been in your city for some time.
Street photographer, isn't that it?
That is correct.
Take pictures of tourists against some Cairo backgrounds and sell them the shots for a few piastres.
And that is the manner in which I have made my living since the last war drove me out of my homeland.
Well, business must be pretty good if you can rent the tambourine for a night.
Be so kind as to sit down, Mr. Jordan.
I can take it standing.
May I offer you a cigarette?
No, thanks, but you can turn on some more lights.
That would not be wise.
All right, let's get to it, Melnick. Are you or are you not going to rent my tambourine?
Well, as a matter of fact, Mr. Jordan...
You're not. It's just a lot of conversation to get me out here.
It was the only way in which I could get you out here to see me. I hope it does not inconvenience you too much.
Oh, no, no, no. I do this all the time.
I could have come to you if I possibly could, Mr. Jordan, but it would have been most unwise for me to leave this place without you.
Look, Melnick, you may have a lot of time for games.
I'm sorry, Mr. Jordan, but this is no game. This is very important to me. And it may be profitable to you.
How profitable?
I'm sure that we can arrive at an agreeable figure.
For me doing what?
Protecting me.
Ah.
I'm willing to pay a reasonable sum for you to protect me on a journey to Alexandria.
Look, I'm a cafe owner, not a bodyguard.
For a price, could you not be both?
Maybe. Who are you hiding out from?
That I cannot tell you as yet.
And then I don't figure we can get together.
But, Mr. Jordan...
I want to know who you're hiding from and what you've done.
Nothing that you need to be overly concerned about.
Well, why not go to the police? They're in the protection business.
Because this is and must remain a private matter.
And then keep it real private, Melnick, and leave me out.
Just a moment, Mr. Jordan.
Yeah?
I was... willing to pay £50, I can double it.
Sorry.
Mr. Jordan, this is more important to me than you can imagine. I need someone like you. I need a man who I can trust and...
No deal, Melnick. Just isn't my racket.
Yes. Yes, of course. I'm sorry to have bothered you, Mr. Jordan. I'll be most glad to pay you for any inconvenience I've put you to.
No, forget it. I'll be seeing you.
I hope so, Mr. Jordan. Yes. I hope so.
A pathetic look came over his face as I turned from him, and he shut the door softly behind me. I took about two steps down the hall when things began to happen. I threw open the door and looked inside. Melnick was hugging the floor, and there was a face outside the broken window. It was big, and it was red. It was topped off with a flock of red hair and a beard to match. And its owner was packing a smoking gun and an ugly look. When he saw me, his free arm came up to cover his face. I saw his gun move, and I ducked back into the hall as he tried for me with the bullets he had left. Then it was quiet. I looked inside. The face was gone. Nothing was there. Just Melnick lying in a pool of blood on the floor. Dead. I put in a quick call to Captain Sam Sabaya, the Cairo police. After two cigarettes and a lot of questions by the assorted lodgers of the apartment house, Sam got there with Sergeant Greco and a couple of his boys.
Jordan, someday you must tell me why it is you always manage to be where there is trouble.
Oh, I guess it's a gift, Sam.
Yes, it must be something like that. Yeah. So this is the dead man.
Now that's real observant.
Show more respect to the captain of police, Mr. Jordan.
That is all right, Sergeant. Let him have fun while he can. Who is the dead man, Jordan?
His name is Jan Melnick. He's a street photographer.
Hard of hearing, I see. This is somewhat of a novelty for me, a corpse with a hearing aid. Sergeant.
Yes, Captain.
You will examine the body and the room. Jordan and I will be in the hall.
Yes, of course, Captain.
Jordan, come outside. We have some things to talk about.
Well, go ahead, Sam. You're in charge.
What were you doing out here, Jordan?
Drumming up some business.
Jordan, I must ask you to
cooperate.
But
that's it, Sam. He called me up, said he wanted to rent the tambourine for a night. When I got out here, I found out that he was a fake. He really wanted me to take a trip with him to Alexandria.
What for?
Bodyguard.
Who was after him, Jordan?
He didn't say.
Are you sure he didn't say?
Oh, ease off, Sam. You're getting a lot of information. I think I can give you the killer's name.
Well, this is, as you would say, a switch.
Yeah. Well, Melnick called out Kafka just before he was killed.
Kafka? You can supply a description of the man?
All I saw was his face. Looked like a stop signal. Red hair, red beard.
And you can identify him if you see him again?
Yep.
Very well, Jordan. I will look through our files, and if I find a picture of a man who fits your description, you will get the opportunity to identify him.
All right, you do that.
And let us hope for your sake that there is such a man.
And I'll be home sleeping.
Oh, just one moment, Jordan.
What's it now?
Since you are my only witness, let us hope you manage to stay alive.
Sure, Sam. I'll work on it real hard. I made it a point to keep my promise and went home to bed over the tambourine. I slept sound, but not for long. The light in my eyes that woke me wasn't coming from the window. It was still dark outside. It was the ceiling light. I wondered how I'd failed to turn it off. About then, I decided I was dreaming. And not a bad dream. She stood at the foot of my bed looking at me with dark brown eyes. Her black hair was drawn slickly back from her slim face. Her lips were firm but full. I approved of the rest of her, too. All but the black automatic she held in her hand.
I won't trouble you but a moment, Mr. Jordan.
Manners, lady. We haven't been introduced.
Here's your robe. Get up.
Not that it matters, but just how did you get in here?
That's beside the point.
Look, I always wake up in a bad humor. Just what do you want?
A photographic negative.
You unlocked the wrong door, lady.
Doesn't this gun convince you that I'm serious? Now get it for me, and quickly.
Supposing I have it, where did I get it?
From Jan Melnick, of course.
Melnick? I see.
I'm quite sure he gave it to you.
I didn't kill Melnick.
I'm quite aware of that.
Suppose you try waking up a man with a red beard named Kafka.
I am interested only in you, Mr. Jordan.
Are my eyes lighting up?
I believe you understand me.
Why would Melnick give me a negative? What's this all about?
I didn't come here to answer questions. Mr. Jordan, I'm becoming very impatient. For the last time...
I haven't got it.
I think you're lying.
I'll come back in the morning. We'll have a cozy chat.
Mr. Jordan, what are you doing?
Opening the door. So long, lady.
Not yet, Mr. Jordan. Ooh.
Her pistol handle had come down over my right ear. My eyes looked at each other, and I went back to sleep for quite a while. But no more dreams. Only a loud ringing in my ears that got louder and louder. I reached out to shut off the alarm clock, and all I found was the edge of the rug. I was still on the floor. The ringing continued. I finally got up and stumbled over to the table. It was all I could do to lift the receiver from the hook. Yeah?
Did I wake you up, Mr. Jordan?
Who is this?
My name is Kafka.
Oh, I thought so. Sabaya is slowing down. I figured he'd have you by now.
In the morning newspaper, I have been reading the things you have been saying about me.
Well, if they're good, they're lies.
They say I have killed a man named Melnick.
They got it right.
They say also that a man named Rocky Jordan saw me. That is most unfortunate for this man.
Yeah, you're telling me. Means he loses a lot of sleep while a redhead yaks at him on the phone.
It means that such a man who tells such tales makes life uncomfortable for Kafka.
So, what's he going to do about it?
Kafka suggests that if suddenly this man Jordan's memory fails and he can no longer identify the man who killed Melnick, then this man Jordan may find himself somewhat richer.
That doesn't appeal. I'm getting tired of money.
I will give you a moment to reconsider.
It's a waste of time. You also took a couple of shots at me, Kafka. That doesn't make us friendly.
Jordan?
Then I don't like getting pushed around because somebody's looking for some sort of negative I'm supposed to have. You know what I'm talking about.
Might I suggest, Mr. Jordan, that you do not go back to sleep? I am thinking that you have such a short time to live. You should enjoy yourself.
Yeah. The whole thing was beginning to irritate. I threw on some clothes and headed down to police headquarters to do a little screaming at Sabaya. It was a little after 7 when I got there. As Sabaya rocked back and forth in his squeaky chair, he looked tired. It figured he'd spent the night there. Sergeant Greco stood by his side.
Well, Captain, Look who has come to visit us.
This isn't a visit, Greco. It's business.
Yeah, we have some with you too, Jordan.
Looks like you two boys have been hatching up something.
Jordan, Sergeant Greco and I have spent the night looking through our files to find a picture of the man you say killed Jan Melnick.
Yes, Mr. Jordan.
Just a moment, and, Sergeant. Jordan, this is the picture we found that fits the description you gave us. Look at this.
Sure.
Is this the man?
Yeah, that's the one. Red face, red beard and hair.
You are sure, Jordan? We do not want you to make a mistake.
Oh, I'm sure, all right, Sam. Nobody else would come that ugly.
There you are, Captain. I told you,
just
Mr.
a
Jordan,
moment, Sergeant. Jordan, you do not wish to change your decision that this is a photograph of the man who killed Melnick?
What are you getting at?
What is it you're trying to do, Jordan?
But Sam...
Why are you lying to us?
Hey, what's going on?
This is a photograph of a man who has been dead for 2 years. Jordan, I think perhaps that we had better keep you here until you decide to tell the truth.
You're listening to Red Stands for Blood, tonight's adventure with Rocky Jordan. Here's a quick summary of Adventure Mystery on CBS. Inner Sanctum on Monday. Mr. and Mrs. North and Mystery Theater on Tuesday. Suspense, crime photographer, Mr. Keene, tracer of lost persons, and the FBI in Peace and War on Thursdays. Gangbusters, Philip Marlowe, and Escape on Saturdays. Don't miss Mystery on CBS. And now we return you to Cairo and tonight's adventure with Rocky Jordan, Red Stands for Blood.
When you see a man with a gun throwing slugs your way, you have to remember what he looks like. I'd have bet my last piaster I could identify the red face, red hair, and beard of the man I saw kill Jan Melnick. And when Captain Sam Sabaya pulled that man's picture from the police files, I said he was the one. I was still sure of it when Sam pulled the clincher. According to police records there at headquarters, the killer I had identified had been dead for 2 years. I didn't like the way Sam and his number one boy, Sergeant Greco, were looking at me.
Now, Jordan, perhaps you will be more careful with your information. Who killed Jan Melnick?
That's his picture, Sam.
Mr. Jordan, Captain Sabaya just told you that man has been dead.
Yeah, I heard him, Greco. What's the lowdown on Kafka, Sam?
He was a native of Turkey, an international thief who would stop at nothing.
Not much, I'll believe. What makes you so sure he's dead?
I have the complete report here. 2 years ago, the Turkish authorities finally caught up with him. Kafka's speeding car went off a cliff into the Bosporus. It was very deep there.
They recovered the body?
It was hardly necessary.
I thought so. That's where they made the mistake.
There has been no mistake, Jordan.
Kafka doesn't think so.
Now, what are you trying to tell me?
He just called me on the phone. Kafka knows I saw him kill Melnick.
Jordan, cannot I make you understand?
There's something else to think about. A black-haired dame with long eyelashes wandered up to my room last night looking for a photographic negative. She thinks Melnick gave it to me.
What was this dame, this lady's name?
I don't know. But I think the negative fits into this case.
And where do you suggest that we look for it?
That's your problem. All I want you to do is get those two people out of my hair.
You will be quite safe in one of our cells, Mr. Jordan.
Look,
we have no reason to keep him, Greco. So now, Jordan, if that is all you wish to say...
Well, what about Kafka, Sam?
Let me repeat. This report on him is quite clear. I am inclined to believe it.
Okay, if you don't find him, I will. I don't want him on my tail. There was a photographic negative somewhere in Cairo that was hot enough to set up a murder. Jan Melnick had died for it. I might be next. I wanted to know why. I went back to the place on Sharia Nazim where I had found him in his room. I found out two things. He had rented the room a short time before but hadn't lived in it. And he had a wife. Their home was down on the Nile waterfront in the worst part of Cairo. So I looked it up. You could call it a home if you like. It was worse than a shambles. Not fit for one of the starved dogs that roam the dirty streets.
Who is it?
Mrs. Melnick?
Yes.
I'm Rocky Jordan.
Oh, you are the man who saw my husband killed.
That's right. I'm sorry, but there are a few things I'd like to ask you, Mrs. Melnick.
Well, won't you come in, Mr. Jordan? Please be seated.
Thank you.
I wish I could serve you something, Mr. Jordan, but
no,
you
that
see,
isn't
I...
necessary. Mrs. Melnick.
You know Jan well?
Not before he called me yesterday. I had seen him on the streets.
On the streets, yes. Mr. Jordan, it was not always as you see here. We had a good home in Prague.
I'm sure you did.
Jan was a good husband, but we lost everything. After we came to Cairo, it was hard for him. Always he dreamed of taking me away from this.
Mrs. Melnick, any idea why someone would want to kill your husband?
No. Only that he said he must make a trip. He said that when he came back, there would be enough money for our old age, and there would be no more worries. And now he...
You suppose he took the room on Sharia Nazim to hide out from something?
It is possible. I do not know.
Miss Melnick, your husband worked for a photographic company, didn't he?
Yes. Tourist Pictures Incorporated, he told me.
He ever tell you about a certain negative he wanted to protect?
Negative? No.
What about a good-looking brunette girl with sleek hair and long eyelashes?
I know of no such person.
Did he ever mention a criminal named Kafka?
A criminal? No, Mr. Jordan. Jan was a good man. He worked hard.
Sure, I know. Being hard of hearing must have made it difficult, too.
What do you mean, Mr. Jordan? My husband was not deaf, not at all.
I see. Now, Mrs. Melnick, there are a few of your husband's effects down at police headquarters. I wonder if you'd like to get them.
Oh, yes, yes, I do want them.
Then suppose we go down now. I'll take them.
You're most kind, Mr. Jordan. Will you wait a moment while I get ready?
Surely, I'll be right outside. I went down a few steps and looked out across the river. I'll never know why, but in a split second, I glanced back to see the flash of a knife. It clipped my ear and sailed out into the Nile. When I saw where it came from, I saw red. All red. Face, hair, and beard. And Kafka came from my throat. I was braced for him, and we rolled together across a narrow landing and into the river. I was underneath, and he held me there in the shallow water. My hand found his beard, and I dragged him down with me. He couldn't take it too long. His fingers loosened, and we were up. I hung onto his beard and flailed away at his ugly face. Then he slipped loose, and his boot heels sunk in below my stomach. When I came up, Kafka was halfway up the bank and running.
Mr. Jordan!
Get a good look at that guy, Mrs. Melnick. He's the guy who killed your husband.
I saw him. He was trying to kill you.
Yeah. All right, now, let's keep our date at headquarters. Up the hill away, we caught a taxi, and in 30 minutes, we got out at headquarters. Captain Sabaya wasn't there, but Sergeant Greco sat behind the desk.
Well, Mr. Jordan, been swimming in the Nile?
For once in your life, you're right, Greco. But never mind the small talk. We came to get Jan Melnick's effects.
Why should I give them to you?
Easy, Greco. This is Mrs. Melnick, Jan Melnick's wife.
Oh, I am at your service, madam.
Sergeant Greco, my husband had only a few things, but can I have them now?
Your identification, Mrs. Melnick.
Look, Greco, I'll identify her.
Like you identified Kafka's picture, Mr. Jordan?
Will this letter do, Sergeant Greco?
Let me see. Very well. Now, will you sign here, please?
Okay, now get it, Greco. Cut the stall.
One moment. Here you are, Mrs. Melnick.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Sergeant Greco. Thank you. But wait, this...
Come on, Mrs. Melnick. Let's get out of here. She put her husband's effects in a little bag she was carrying, and I hurried her out. None of the stuff looked worth bothering about, but I didn't want Greco sniffing around. I took her down the street a ways, and then we stopped. Mrs. Melnick, do you mind if I see those things now?
If you wish, Mr. Jordan.
These did belong to your husband, didn't they?
Oh, yes, yes, the watch and but this is not his. What is it?
It's a hearing aid. He was wearing it when I saw him last.
Jan had no need for this.
Let's have a look.
What are you doing, Mr. Jordan?
He had some reason for wearing this, Mrs. Melnick. Maybe something inside. Yeah.
What is it?
It's a negative.
But it is so tiny.
It's microfilm. Too small to make out anything.
Will you take it to the police?
Let Greco get it. I'll find out what this is all about. Miss Melnick, suppose you go to my cafe temporary.
If you wish, Mr. Jordan, but why?
Just wait for me there. When I see you again, I figure I'll be able to explain everything.
You're listening to Red Stands for Blood, Tonight's adventure with Rocky Jordan. Mystery ranks high at CBS. Here's an example. Tomorrow night at 9, the door creaks open on the inner sanctum and a story told the way you want to hear it. Suspenseful, exciting, and with a sound plot. Don't miss Inner Sanctum tomorrow, Monday night at 9 on your CBS station. And now we take you back to Cairo and tonight's adventure with Rocky Jordan. Red stands for blood.
That tiny bit of microfilm had the answers. I had to find a photographic shop to see what they were. And why not the place where Jan Melnick had worked? Tourist Pictures Incorporated. I located the place on a side street off Salomon Pasha Square. As I went in, I saw a face start from behind the curtains in back. A slim face with dark eyes, framed by sleek black hair. She was just as pretty and just as scared as the night before. I got back there on the double. Ah. No gun this time, lady?
I don't have it now, Mr. Jordan.
I didn't get your name.
I'm Marta Helwig.
Now let's have some more answers.
Why are you here?
Returning the visit, maybe. You left in a hurry last night.
Oh, Rocky, I'm sorry. I didn't want to hurt you, but I had to.
Sure, they always have to.
Believe me, Rocky. I didn't shoot. I could have.
Oh, forget it. My head's clear enough now. You were looking for a photographic negative, Marta.
Yes, I must find it.
Why?
If I don't, I'll be killed.
By a redhead named Kafka?
Yes. Yes, Rocky. If you know anything about it.
Take a look. This the one?
Why, perhaps. I don't know. Where'd you get it?
From where Melnick hid it?
Oh, Rocky, please let me have it. I'll do anything, Rocky. Anything.
No deals till I see what's on it. You got a projector here?
Yes, over here.
Turn it on.
All right, Rocky, but we've got to hurry.
Wait a little bit of focus.
Rocky, that's the one.
Taken in front of the Grand Theater. Who's the Egyptian?
I don't know, but you see who's in back.
Sure, no surprise at all. It's Kafka. Yeah, but he looks a little surprised.
You understand now, Rocky.
Yeah, everything. Jan Melnick just happened to snap this picture, and Kafka was in it by accident, along with the date of the next picture showing at the theater. So he's located in Cairo, date and all.
That's right.
When Melnick developed the negative, he must have recognized that ugly face. So he put it on microfilm and planned to get it to Turkey, where there was a price on Kafka's head.
Only Kafka found out.
Where do you fit?
Well, Kafka came to me offering me a price if I would get the negative and return it. Seemed the easy way for him.
That bump in my head didn't pay off, Marta.
But, Rocky, that wasn't all. He said if I didn't get it for him, that I needn't plan my breakfast for this morning. You see now why I was desperate.
Did he show up?
No, not yet. But now we can give it to him.
No, nothing doing. Get your coat, Marta.
Oh, please, Rocky.
Get it. We're going to Sam Sabaya to prove that Kafka's alive.
All right, Rocky. I'll be right back.
Just take this film.
Just leave it there, George.
Huh?
Leave it in the projector. I will get it.
Kafka?
Yes. Now get back. I use a pistol better than a knife.
You showed up a little too late.
In time to get what I want.
Mission accomplished, huh?
No, not yet. I warned you to lay off, Jordan. You know too much.
Now what do I get?
This, Jordan.
I braced for the slug, but it didn't come. Kafka just looked at me. His gun dropped from his hand, and he went limp, like the hump on a starving camel. Marta stood in the doorway, the color gone from her dark eyes. Well, I see you found your gun again.
Yes, I found it.
Who was it for? Kafka or me?
Does it make any difference now?
No. Now you're in the clear now, baby. You can relax. Suddenly she did, but I got to her before she slid to the floor. From then on, things were more pleasant. When she was steady again, we paid Sam Sabaya a visit. He was real pleased. But Greco wasn't, because he got the job of taking care of Kafka. I made a date with Marta to meet her later, and then Sam and I went to the tambourine where Mrs. Melnick was waiting.
So that is what Jan was trying to do. But why?
Mrs. Melnick, your husband had only the highest motives in his effort to get Kafka's photograph to the Turkish authorities.
He knew he was asking for trouble. He figured the risk was worth it. For your sake, Mrs. Melnick.
Unfortunately, he was dealing with a desperate criminal. The whole affair is most regrettable. However, there is one consolation.
Yes?
The Turkish government had a price of £1,000 on Kafka's head. I am sure Jordan will agree that the money goes to you.
Of course, Sam. Kafka would never have been found if it hadn't been for Jan Melnick.
Yes, that is true. I only wish he'd realized that my own comfort was not so important to me as our life together. But Jan thought only of me. He was a good man.
It's CBS again at this same time next week for another story of adventure and intrigue when we take you back to Cairo and the Cafe Tambourine run by Rocky Jordan. Jack Moyles plays the title role, the story by Gomer Kuhl and Larry Roman. Rocky Jordan is produced and directed by Cliff Howell with original music by Richard Arant. Larry Thor speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.